This show is presented in part by Dodge. Domestic, not domesticated. Auto news, exclusive interviews, real-world test drives. It's your turn to step into the driver's seat. This is The Drive. Now, here's automotive expert, television and radio host, Alan Taylor.
Well, hey, everybody. Welcome to the show. A lot of great auto news, as the guy with the big voice says today. A lot of things going on. And to help me talk about that a little bit is BJ Colleen, automotive journalist extraordinaire, all the way from the great state of Nevada today. How you doing, BJ?
I'm doing great. The sun's shining. It's warm. What could be better?
I know, right? You know what? Man, spring is here and spring has sprung. Everything is growing like crazy, which is great.
Yeah. So. No more snow on the ground. Well, not for us.
Yeah, right.
Some people getting snow, but not us.
I know. I saw Chicago. Boy, it's like Chicago got blasted. I was like, what? Oh, my gosh.
Oh, and that's why you don't live out there.
No, that's for sure. By golly. Well, so in the news, where do you want to start? There's a lot going on. We're not going to bash on Tesla, everybody. Don't worry.
Yeah,
oh, yes, we are. Oh, yes, we are. Oh, yes, we are.
That's a hobby, you know? It's become a hobby. It's kind of our thing. That's what we do, right? Not only our hobby, it's a lot of people's hobby.
So, oh, dear.
It's going to be a popular hobby, too, actually. Let's start by talking about the Cadillac Super Cruise. And I know you mentioned it because didn't you reveal the CT5 sedan on the show?
Yeah, and the XT6. But I don't know if the XT6 had it, but I know I did talk about it, and it was like, what is Super Cruise? And I said, well, it's like semi-autonomous. The car like drives itself almost. And that was about all I could really say about it because I had like 30 seconds to talk about the whole car.
That's true. You know? Well, you didn't have much time.
Do you know?
Yeah, it's interesting. They said that they're going to put it on the upcoming 2020, not 2019, 2020 CT5 sedan, although not initially. They said it's going to roll out a little bit later on. But basically, Super Cruise is exactly what you said. It's an autonomous driving system that, you know, just like the Tesla cars do, where you can put it on, you know, autonomous drive, and it'll just, you can sit back and hopefully not fall asleep, but sit back and let it do things. Now, the only problem with that system is right now they have it operational on the CT6 Platinum model and other CT6 trims, but the system can't switch lanes and only works on right now about 130,000 miles of divided highway that GM has mapped with lighter equipped vehicles. Mm. Now, you know, 130,000 miles may sound like a lot, but, you know, in the United States, there's just so many miles of highway. And,
right. And
the fact that the Super Cruise, I mean, if you're buying it, you're paying a lot of money. I'm not exactly sure, but it's going to cost you more because it's part of technology packages. But it's going to cost a lot of money for something that you may not be able to use ever if you own that car. Mm. So the 2020 models are bringing out a system that's kind of like a little halfway between the current model and system and the next system. So, you know, they want to be a Tesla fighter. Everybody wants to be a Tesla fighter. They want to have something that is really autonomous and ready to go, but not everybody feels comfortable about it. So it's going to be interesting to see how Cadillac does with this, because Cadillac's got their own set of problems right now. You know, their cars, they're not selling. They're selling the SUVs, but the cars not so much, and that's a big part of their vehicle lineup. And so it's going to be interesting to see if they can pull this off to actually get that Super Cruise out to the entire U.S. lineup, you know, in the next couple of years. So we'll see what happens.
So, you know, I don't know enough about it, and probably nobody does it, because like you said, they're just beginning to start to roll out, but how autonomous is it? In other words, could you go to sleep? Look, I drive to visit you in Las Vegas from Oregon, and I take the back way, and there are hours of nothing. It's like you're out there, and it's nothing. I would love to be able to just take a little snooze when I'm driving along, but I imagine those roads aren't even equipped yet for that, where you would really use it, where there's just nothing out there.
You know? Yeah. And you take mountain roads, and, you know, probably the first roads that are going to actually be used on are the straight roads. But, you know, the Tesla one can just do it. But again, the Tesla ones, I believe they can't change lanes either. So, you know, eventually, maybe 5-10 years from now, you will be able to get in a car where you can actually, you know, sit in the back seat, or won't even have a steering wheel, where you can just do autonomous driving. But again, you're sharing the road with other cars that may not be autonomous vehicles. You're sharing the road with truck drivers who may not have an autonomous truck, who might fall asleep and drift into your lane. So, you know, anything is possible, and you shouldn't be sleeping in your car right now. Although people who are driving Teslas are sleeping in their cars. You know, they've got photos of them doing it.
No.
That's not Tesla's fault. That's people who think, oh, I'm just going to sleep in my car and, you know, and be fine. But it's just, oh, my God. I mean, we're just in such a transitional period right now. That, you know, we've got semi-autonomous cars. There are some autonomous cars, but you still got to pay attention behind the wheel. That's all there is to it.
Well, so we're in that conversion from, you know, driver cars to driverless cars. It's going to take a decade, I think, before it normalizes. Let's take a break. We'll come back and talk about more auto news here on The Drive. I'm Alan Taylor. She's BJ Colleen. This is The Drive. Cancer is the number one cause of death by disease for children in the U.S. today. Since the Austin Hatcher Foundation's birth in 2006, it has grown to provide unique programs to help the children and the families affected by pediatric cancer. Support begins at the time of diagnosis and continues throughout survivorship at no cost to families. Lives touched by the foundation continue to rise each day. But we need your help. Donate, volunteer, or partner with the Austin Hatcher Foundation. Learn how you can get involved. Visit hatcherfoundation.org for more information.
Shot through the heart, and you're to blame, darling. You give love a bad name.
Well, it is The Drive. I'm Alan Taylor, BJ Colleen on the line. Our show brought to you in part by Kia's boldest SUV ever, the 2020 Telluride. I just got done driving it for a week. Loved it! Kia, give it everything. BJ, let's talk about something that has been kind of bugging me a little bit here. The new Corvette, they're calling it the C8, eighth generation,
has
been driven all around. It was driving around New York. This is the new mid-engine Corvette, but it was all camoed out, you know, camouflaged paint, strange looking, I don't know, whatever they call it, a digital paint job to where it's hard to see. Or it's like it's wrapped, whatever it is, and it's hard to see what the lines look like, but you could still see what it looks like. But it's like they're driving it all over the place. There's spy shots of it everywhere. None without this digital wrap on it to where it, you know, it's kind of camouflage looking. But I guess they finally announced that they're going to have an official reveal. What do you know about that?
Well, it's interesting because I don't know if you've ever been to the National Corvette Museum in Bowling Green, Kentucky. Have you
not
been there?
No, I haven't. I've seen pictures when it caved in.
It's actually a pretty cool museum. But they had their annual bash over the weekend. And what they actually did is Chevy brought a Corvette prototype and drove it down the middle of the street. And it's still in camouflage. It wasn't, you know, unconcealed. But everybody got a chance to take some pictures and take a look at it. And pretty interesting that they gave them, because the people that are at that museum are really fanatics. They're the ones that really are all about it. So they had a chance to take a look at a couple things. Chevy did reveal the logo. And obviously, it's still going to have the checkered flag on the left, the bow tie on the right, and the fleur-de-lis on the right, too.
The what? But what'd you call it?
The fleur-de-lis is what it's called.
Fleur-de-lis! Okay, go ahead, just checking.
It's French. Look it up, Alan. I'm not going to explain it.
The fleur-de-lis, okay.
Yeah, it's that little kind of fancy cross with flowers on it, looks like. But it's interesting because usually the wings are spread apart, and this one, they push the arms together instead of just connecting at the base. They're all together, so it's kind of interesting. And you can have a logo. It's going to be in a carbon flash finish. They said, or a bright chrome finish is kind of cool. But what's interesting is that they are going to reveal it on July 18th, the national reveal. So this is probably going to be, you know, if somebody owns a Corvette that you know, this is going to be a national holiday for them because, you know, how long have we been waiting and hearing about the C8 engine Corvette? So it's just been, you know, almost as long as when they put out the SSR. I mean, that was like 6 years, and we've been hearing about this car for a long time, too.
Well, here's the deal. You know, this is a complete departure from, you know, the old, you know, front engine, long nose, short deck. This is now looks more like a Ferrari looking car, rear engine, you know, mid to rear engine type thing. And just a whole different machine. Is there something significant about that date, July 18th? Was something born or somebody born on that date?
You know, that's a good question. I'm not enough of a Corvette aficionado to know that, but possibly I'll have to take a look Thanks for asking. Do you know?
I don't know. I was just wondering because it's kind of an odd date. I mean, I think July 4th would have been a better date.
Ask the listeners. Come on and get on Alan's Facebook page, The Drive with Alan Taylor, and let us know if that's something significant. Yeah, if you're a Corvettophile, is that the word, a Corvettophile? Well, a Corvettist, a Corvetter?
I don't like the word, you know, it kind of rhymes with pedophile. But here's the thing. This vehicle has evidently a tremendous amount of horsepower, and they've been having problems with it, twisting the frame and some other different problems they've had. It's kind of, like I've said before, it's a good problem if you're a horsepower maniac like me and you. But for the rest of the world, it's like, oh, my gosh, what's happening to that car? You know, but I think it's kind of, you know, when you're building a car that's going to have 800, 900 horsepower, you know, just like the Demon had problems. The back windows were popping out when the chassis would flex. These are the kind of problems you have. These are real world problems when you start talking 800, 900 horsepower. I think it's awesome. Personally, you know,
yeah, you better know what you're doing. There's no question. Yeah. You better know what you're doing. So what's interesting, though, they're holding a raffle for the C8. And the prize is the next gen Vet with VIN 25, celebrating the 25 year history of the Corvette Museum. Now, there's a couple catches, though. Tickets are $25. The drawing's going to be held on August 31st. You can buy a ticket online. You don't need to be a resident of Kentucky, because that's where the museum is. Right. But the rules say that you must be physically located in Kentucky at the time of purchase. So you have to go to Kentucky, buy the ticket online, and then you can leave. But if you want it bad enough.
Well, there you go. July 18th is when they're going to officially reveal the Corvette C8 mid-engined super califragilistic Ferris Bueller's Day Off car. We're going to take a break. There's more to come. Brembo has been stopping champions on the track as well as drivers like you and me on the street for over 50 years. Whether it's UV-coated brake discs, low-dust premium ceramic brake pads, or high-temperature brake fluid, BrembostoreUSA.com is the place to go to buy genuine Brembo OE equivalent replacement brake components. Go to BrembostoreUSA.com to help you achieve that 60-0 braking performance you deserve and expect from Brembo. Brembo, the choice of champions and consumers for over 50 years.
This is The Drive with Alan Taylor.
And joining me is BJ Killeen. We've been talking about the C8 Corvette, the next generation, the new one, the mid-engine, gigantic horsepower. They haven't actually announced yet, but they're talking, you know, I think the rumor mill is between 800 and 900 horsepower somewhere, which is going to be wild. Right?
For a production car, it's crazy. I don't know what the insurance going to be on. It's going to be astronomical.
I love it. It's going to have, I'm sure it's going to have Brembo brakes, our show brought to you by Brembo. Choice of Champions, yes. Yep. So most of these cars have been tested on the Nürburgring in Germany. But evidently there's a little bit of news that you wanted to talk about the Nürburgring. What do you got for us?
Well, yeah, I think most car enthusiasts know that the Nürburgring is a track in Germany. It's not a track, it's actually a road that they close off for testing. And it's 14.7 miles, and it's, I guess, it got elevation and twists and turns. And, you know, it could be snowing at the top and not the bottom. And it's just like the place to do the testing, because if you've challenged that, and I think, what is the track record? I think, does a Corvette own it, or a Porsche owns the track record for ridiculous, you know, the amount of time that they can do it
I know that the Viper, of course, I own a Viper ACR, and I know the Viper did it in like 7 minutes and 2 seconds. They were trying to break the 7 minute. But I know there are cars that have done it in the sixes. And, yes. So
I mean, I guess the Nissan is saying 7 minutes, 8 seconds, lap time record for the GTR Nismo for production cars. So,
seven minutes is hauling butt.
Twice the normal time it would take to go 14 miles. But the whole point is that because it's such a revered test track where everybody wants to go, everybody's copying it. And Toyota is the latest. They actually just finished and opened their proving ground facility in Japan with a Nürburgring-inspired racetrack. Now, it's not the same. It's only 3.3 miles in length. But the whole point was to try to mimic the conditions. The whole course winds through 2.5 miles of wooded area. There's hills. There's elevation changes. You know, it's all about, hey, we don't really want to spend the money to send our cars over to Germany, so let's kind of reproduce something that we have here and, you know, see if we can at least make it work and make it duplicate somewhat the, what's going on in the Nürburgring. So that's what they went ahead and did. And again, it's a giant test track, so it's going to have other simulations of the roads around the world in addition to a high-speed track, because you don't just build a 3.3-mile course. You have to do other things there as well. But the whole facility isn't done yet. It'll be ready in 2023. But maybe it's one of us will get a chance to go to Japan and check it out. So we'll have to see. It's kind of interesting.
I'm getting to go drive the new Supra, which is a partnership between BMW and Toyota. In a couple of weeks at outside of Washington, D.C. at a racetrack there. And then, you know, it's funny because you guys have near you Spring Mountain, which is a beautiful track. And you have all these different elevation changes. There's these tracks are popping up like crazy. Some friends of mine outside of Phoenix, Arizona, just opened a track called Apex. And it's a private motorsports park, kind of like Spring Mountain. If you have a super fast, crazy car that does its best on a racetrack, like my Viper ACR, I mean, it's really, it's a race car.
Yes.
It's silly to have it on the street unless you're just kind of wanting to show off. And that's really what it's all about. But I've never had my car on a track and I think I have it sold. I just wasn't using it. You know, it's like, it's time to give it to somebody that's going to go out and drive it the way it was meant to. But I want to go, and there's, what's it, Thermal? There's one outside of Palm Springs called Thermal, the Thermal Cup. BMW has their kind of their headquarters there right now for a BMW Performance Driving School. I know they've got one also in Spartanburg, South Carolina. Yeah.
Been on that track. That's fun.
You know, it's funny. They're like golf courses now. It's like instead of having a golf course, you have a driving course. And I think it's brilliant. But they develop these cars, and it all started out with the Nürburgring, and everybody used that as the benchmark. And now they're having them all over the country, which is fantastic. Plus, they're open to the public where we can enjoy them.
Yeah, and if you have that kind of car, I mean, they don't want you tooling around in, you know, in your smart car, which, again, is not going to be possible because those are going away soon. But what's interesting is the at Spring Mountain, they're trying to, they're not doing a 3.3-mile course. They're doing a course that actually mimics almost to the, a little bit more, 15 miles is the estimate, 14.5 to 15 miles. So look at it this way, you know, as a domestic manufacturer, you know, Ford's got their GT and GM's got this new Corvette. Wouldn't it be a lot more efficient money-wise and time-wise to go to Nevada than to fly it all the way to Germany and test it there if you've got a course that mimics it? So it's a brilliant plan. I mean, once it's finished, they plan to have an off-road portion, a kart track, a place where you can land a Gulfstream aircraft. They're also going to have hotels, casinos, malls, cinema. It's really supposed to be a destination place. So it's going to be fun. It's going to help the community out there in Pahrump. And it really is going to be a big, big deal. Now, I don't know how long it's going to take to complete. I don't know how far along he is. Next time you come here, we need to take a drive out. Because he's a friend of yours, isn't he?
Well,
Brad Rambo?
I became a little bit friendly with him. The guy has a helicopter, so he took me and showed me where they were going to lay that course out. It's been about a year and a half ago. And I got to tell you, first of all, Spring Mountain, you guys write that down, Spring Mountain. It's in Pahrump, Nevada. It's about 45 minutes outside Vegas. Unbelievable. All I can tell you is, even if you don't own a car, you can go there and you can jump in a full-on race car. They have these race cars called Wolf, and it's literally a one-seater. You sit right in the middle, paddle shift, unbelievable. Go out and do this. It's like a bucket list kind of a thing. All I can tell you is that these racetracks are absolutely game changers for automotive enthusiasts. BJ Killeen, thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
I'll take a little break, come back with some more here at the bottom of the hour. And this is The Drive all across America and podcast. We'll be right back with more.
On the web.
Now's the time to earn your bragging rights and rule the road in a powerful Dodge vehicle. With enough style, horsepower, and performance to make your muscle car dreams come true, it's no wonder J.D. Power named Dodge the number one ranked brand in initial quality and driver appeal for mass market brands. Join the brotherhood and experience the strength of Dodge muscle today. Visit Dodge.com or see your local Dodge dealer for great deals. Tied for initial quality study. For J.D. Power 2020 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards.
Welcome back to The Drive. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
Well, our show is brought to you in part by the new Kia Soul, the new species of Soul, the 2020 Soul. Give it everything, Kia. I appreciate them sponsoring the show. Joining us now is my buddy, George Kennedy III. He is co-founder of Cartender, freelance automotive journalist. You can see his writings in also Car Gurus, the Boston Globe, and U.S. News and World Report. He's one of those guys, he writes stories for everybody. He's a man whore. And are you okay to be called a man whore?
I'll be called whatever gets me on the radio. So I guess, yeah.
Man whore. Oh, that's too funny. George, thanks for being with us. So what have you been driving lately, you man whore? You?
Yeah, thank you. I've been driving the 2019 Toyota 4Runner, which, as you know, I'm a big, I off-road. I'm a big Jeep guy. My family owns Jeeps. And you know that I like the new Wrangler, too.
Right.
This is kind of an older vehicle when you think about it. It was last updated in 2015, and the design really goes back to 2009. It's a decade old, and it shouldn't be this close of a toss-up of giving any money in the world what I would buy right now between a 4Runner and a new Wrangler Unlimited.
Hmm. It's interesting. I just happened to catch a glimpse of a new 4Runner yesterday. It was like this really bright blue.
And
I looked at it and I was like, well, it's a good looking vehicle. I think Toyota gets a little lazy though, because their vehicles are so popular. They're so good that they sit back on their haunches every now and then, and they wait for the competition to catch up, and then they run kind of out ahead a little bit. I personally think that Toyota, this particular 4Runner, and even the, their trucks are a little long on the tooth. I mean, I was at a Ford Ranger event, and they had a four-wheel and off-road area set up. And we took the new Ford Ranger and put it in four-wheel drive, and they were showing us how you could go in the mud and go in the, all kinds of odd places where one tire lifts off the ground about a foot, And then they had a Toyota, a Nissan, a couple other competitive vehicles there. And the Ford Ranger, I got to tell you, people, that Ford Ranger is fantastic. Very smooth. It did everything you ask it to do quietly without groaning and creaking and making noises, and it did it efficiently. When I got in the Toyota Tacoma, which is, a lot of these bits and pieces find their way into the 4Runner, of course.
Sure.
This Toyota, I put it in four-wheel drive, it was creaking and groaning and making oink. It was like grunting at me while it was kind of undulating through this course. Now, of course, they set it up for the Ford Ranger, and maybe the Toyota didn't like it. But the noises that came out of the four-wheel drive system was almost like, what the heck? So I don't know.
And who hosted that comparison?
Ford. Ford, yeah.
Okay. All right.
Just
remember that Ferrari sets up a specific car for straight line tests and a specific car for road tests. Right?
I said that.
These guys aren't giving you their best shot.
No, I said that. But here's what you got to hand it to them for the fact that if you look at perfect example, if I invite you to come do something with me that's going to absolutely make you look like crap, the fact is that maybe you've got some weak areas, right? Now, if I want to showcase your weak areas, but I don't think that today's vehicles should have such weak areas, especially not a Toyota, that you could make it make noises. This truck was making, it was like grunting. The all-wheel drive traction control system was grunting, and it was like, what? And you actually would laugh at it. So the question is it long on the tooth? You're saying that this platform is like a decade old. I think it is long on the tooth from Toyota.
Right, it is, but that's it actually benefits it in a way. And here's my rationale. A, to your point about the Ranger, they probably pulled it off the line and double-tightened the bolts, and they probably pulled the 4Runner or Tacoma off of a rental lot. So, anyways, in the last 10 years, the automobile has changed tremendously. We've got driver assistance features. We've got Apple CarPlay. We've got crazy torque vectoring all-wheel drive systems. And the crossover and the soft-roader SUV has exploded. The market is burgeoned. But in that time, the things that have made those cars popular have also made them softer when it comes to actual capability. Like, there are three SUVs I can think of at the top of my head that don't even offer all-wheel drive, okay? I can think of two right now. So it's the Nissan Kicks and Toyota CHR, and I'm missing a third one. They don't even come with optional all-wheel drive.
Right, but you said it. Soft roader, not off-roader, yeah. Soft roader. In other words, I'm going to go down a dirt road. That's not considered going off-road.
Yeah, I'm going to go park in a field during Coachella.
Right, exactly. So
it's the image of capability, whereas a vehicle like the 4Runner actually gets it done. And what I love about it is that because it's old, because it's a little dated, it's almost more susceptible to the abuse that you're going to put it through if you really want to use it as an off-roader should be used. Like, I get in that thing and I want to load my bags up and like go to a national park or go off-roading or throw a mountain bike in the back. And the difference is that it can handle, probably riding on the same trail as that mountain bike, but also throwing all that crap in the back and not worrying if you're going to get like the leatherette, scuffed or anything. It's susceptible to abuse.
So what you're saying is time tested. It's going to get the job done. It may make a few creaks and noises. To me, just so you know, the noises I was talking about were not loose bolts twisting and things like that. It was the way that the all-wheel drive system was shifting back and forth using the traction control. And
right.
Remember how when you would step on the brakes before when we first got anti-lock brakes and the brake pedal would like vibrate under your foot?
Yes,
and the truck would go oink.
Yeah.
These are the kind of noises I'm talking about where that Ranger was dead silent. But what you're saying is still time tested. Maybe a few grunts and noises, but really works well. And I don't disagree, but I think that it's time for Toyota with the 4Runner and some of their other vehicles and technologies to now kick it up a notch to be the king again. I don't think they're the king right now. I just think that they're at par with everybody else, which is okay.
Right. I mean, they've done that. Like if I had to choose what's the best family sedan of all time, like the 93 or 94 Toyota Camry, like set the bar, and then everybody had like a decade and a half to catch up.
Right,
to that.
Right, exactly.
So this thing just felt so at home, like going off road, and that was what was cool about it. It felt natural. It felt like it was the equivalent of like taking a Camry on a back road. That's how at home this thing felt on the trail.
Well, let me ask you something. I got to take a break. My brother recently bought one of these things, and it was like, I don't know, it was like $45,000-$50,000.
Yeah.
You can really spend some tall change on a Toyota 4Runner or any of the, the four-wheel drive vehicles these days, off-road vehicles, depending on how you outfit them with the technology package. On the other side, let me talk to you a little bit more about off-roading and, which new vehicles still actually have really good off-road credentials. We'll take a break. We're talking with George Kennedy III, car tender, car gurus, Boston Globe, and the rest. He's a man whore. So am I. It's okay. It's all good. We'll take a break. If you're driven by an adventurous heart, you're in luck. The Subaru Outback is all new for 2020. It'll take you as far as you want to explore with standard symmetrical all-wheel drive plus up to 33 miles per gallon. It'll take you off the beaten path with 8.7 inches of ground clearance plus standard X mode with hill descent control. Welcome to the all-new best Outback ever, the 2020 Subaru Outback. Go where love takes you. EPA estimated highway fuel economy for the 2020 Subaru Outback non-turbo models. Actual mileage may vary. Well, you're listening to The Drive. I'm Alan Taylor talking with George Kennedy III, car tender, car gurus, Boston Globe, U.S. News and World Report. He writes for everybody. He's a car maniac like I am. Driving a 2019 Toyota 4Runner, of which my brother bought a 2018. Loves it to death. I think they happen to be a very handsome machine, very capable machine. But my point was, on the other side of the break there, my point was a little long on the tooth with technology, I think. There hasn't been a lot of news on these things since the last refresh, which was, you said 2015, George. How much was yours, by the way?
Right. So they start at 35 and they can top out at like 46.
Yeah.
And ours was 43.2. And that was for the TRD off-road premium. So you get some of the creature comforts, you get the awesome off-road gear, like, you know, terrain response and crawl control, electronic differential, all that stuff. So it's kind of the best of both worlds for their lineup.
Hmm. Where do you think they could improve on this vehicle? I'm curious. And then we want to talk about, you know, does it really have good off-road creds? I mean, it does. But, I mean,
right.
You know, you look at some, like today, a Range Rover, even no matter which one of the Range Rovers from the entry level all the way up, they have all this stuff and they can, these things can crawl the side of a pine tree. I mean, it's insane. So,
yeah, I mean, they also cost six figures too.
Well, so. Some of them do, yes.
Well, what's interesting is I like to compare this vehicle to the Jeep Wrangler Unlimited for obvious reasons. Four doors, off-road capability. The difference is that the Wrangler is like a year old, all new driver assistance technology, all new, you know, infotainment. And then what made Jeep different was that in that update, they had to change a lot about how you interact with the removable top, the retractable top, all those little things that were sort of fun about a Jeep, but maybe a pain in the butt. Like, if you ever tried taking the canvas top off an old Jeep, it would just like rip your fingertips.
Yeah, horrible.
So because the 4Runner is fully enclosed, it doesn't really have that problem. And that's what kind of is its advantage in that it's got a little bit more interior comfort. I find as a taller driver, I'm 6'3", that it's got actually more leg room than the Jeep. Where it could improve is if they were to add all of the driver assistance features and do an infotainment overhaul. Those little things go a long way because at the end of the day, not changing it makes it different. You know, the Pearl Jam line, I change by not changing at all. Small town predicts my fate. Whole thing is because it stayed the same, it's now a standout SUV. You know, over the last 10 years, everybody got softer. Everybody got more road compliant. The 4Runner remains as one of the few true off-road SUVs. So a few little tweaks here and there just to bring it into the 21st century would go a long way.
Well, here's an example. The new G-Wagon from Mercedes-Benz. Very similar size vehicle, but you can get these things AMG where they have like 575 horsepower. You know what I'm saying? But you can also spend, you know, $125,000 on one. But I called the other day because a friend of mine calls me and he goes, I want to get the new G-Wagon because it's so much better than the previous generations of G-Wagon. And it really, truly is. But Toyota with the 4Runner, it's long on the tooth. It's been just hanging there. And you're saying, well, that's, you know, that's okay because it's such a good vehicle as it is.
Right.
But I called about the Mercedes and they're like, yeah, we've got a waiting list to sell these things. We're talking $100,000 SUV. Got a waiting list to sell them because people want to continue to move up line. They want those safety lane departure warning systems and forward crash and backup crash mitigation, whatever, where it'll hit the brakes. Does that Toyota have any of that?
It does not. It has a backup camera, and that's pretty much it. And by the way, the G-Wagon is a great example. That's a vehicle where when they updated it recently, very little change beneath the hood. It's all the same things, the tried and true bulletproof military grade off-road gear. And then they updated the interior to fit the rest of the Mercedes lineup. So Toyota could take a page from Mercedes and say, look, let's keep what makes it great, this bulletproof platform, and then update the interior with some new tech.
But here's the thing. When you look at the G-Wagon, and everybody knows that very iconic G-Wagon look, very boxy, you look at it and you go, they didn't hardly change anything. You set them side by side and all of a sudden you go, wow, there's a big difference. Do you know, George, the only thing that carried across from the current G-Wagon to the new G-Wagon that they're putting on sale immediately right now is the headlight squirter, because it has little headlight squirters, the door handles themselves, and the spare tire cover. That's the only three things it carried across. That's how they refined that vehicle in such a great way that you really can't even tell by looking that it's completely all new. But when you get right down to push comes to shove and you look at how many parts and pieces carry over, not very many at all, but it's bigger inside. It's a little wider. It's a little longer. It's a little this, a little that, but it has everything it needs. Time for Toyota to do it. Nothing wrong with the current one. Nothing wrong with it, but it could just continue like everybody else that needs to do it to be improved. George, you got another segment with you on the other side. Let's talk about some other vehicles that are that have good off-road creds. George Kennedy will be right back with me. I'm Alan Taylor. Our show brought to you in part by Dodge. Domestic, not domesticated. See, I don't take my Dodge off-road, but I take my Ram off-road. See, I got you, George. I got you. Be right back. Cancer is the number one cause of death by disease for children in the U.S. today. Since the Austin Hatcher Foundation's birth in 2006, it has grown to provide unique programs to help the children and the families affected by pediatric cancer. Support begins at the time of diagnosis and continues throughout survivorship at no cost to families. Lives touched by the foundation continue to rise each day. But we need your help. Donate, volunteer, or partner with the Austin Hatcher Foundation. Learn how you can get involved. Visit hatcherfoundation.org for more information. This is The Drive. I'm Alan Taylor, all across America, talking about cars. It's the weekend, or if it's the podcast, it's whatever time of the day it is for you. But you're interested in cars, you're thinking about buying something, or you just want to hear guys talking about cars. Guys and gals. BJ Colleen was on earlier. She knows more about cars than most of us. George Kennedy joining us right now. He is a kind of a dyed-in-the-wool off-road enthusiast. Kind of grew up with Jeeps. You kind of one of those guys that I have a feeling because you have grown up around and owning Jeeps, you go farther than the average person goes when they buy today's off-road vehicle, we'll call it, you know, off-road vehicle, meaning an SUV. They consider they bought something they can take off-road. When they look very closely, they find out some of them don't even have all-wheel drive. So the question is, and we've been talking about Toyota 4Runner, a little bit about G-Wagons, a little bit about Jeeps. What other vehicles have tremendous off-road credentials, in your opinion?
Sure. Well, I mean, the obvious is the Wrangler, but there are other Jeeps within the Jeep lineup that offer decent off-road capability. And the funny thing is, that seems like a no-brainer. You know, 10 years ago, that wasn't always the case.
Right, with the name Jeep you're talking about. Nowadays, if you buy something that says Jeep on it, it's usually trail rated.
Well, at least not every single trim, but at least one trim in a lineup will be. So typically that would be the Trailhawk. So the Jeep Compass Trailhawk and the Jeep Renegade Trailhawk, you know, they're not going to be like the world-crushing off-road crawlers, but they have enough kit beneath the skin to get a little, you know, dirtier than your average crossover. And I think that goes a long way. There's also, you know, Land Rover. There's another brand where from even the Evoque or the Discovery Sport can be optioned up in a way that should be quite capable, you know, in pretty hectic conditions.
What do you think about, like, today's Ford Explorer? I know they have a brand new one coming out. I'm going to be driving it pretty soon. I don't know that the Explorer was ever a vehicle that we would go, oh, yeah, off-road vehicle, you know?
Right. But here's the funny thing. You know, when I talk about the 4Runner being sort of a throwback and that it hasn't changed in 10 years, the 4Runner and the Explorer were peers 15 years ago,
right,
20 years ago, in that they were, you know, more truck-like in their DNA. Ford went away from that. Now they're starting to come back a little bit. They have a rear-wheel drive biased platform. And you have to remember, too, that, you know, not too long ago, Jaguar, Land Rover, Volvo, they were all part of Ford Premium Vehicles Group. And what that meant was that you might see some similarities from, like, the Explorer to the, you know, Range Rover Sport. You'll notice that little dial down there that has the terrain selection.
Right.
The Ford Explorer has a terrain management program that can, you know, modulate wheel slip and braking.
No, they,
and
they, do,
response.
They go so much farther than ever before. But, all right, let me go
right
one more. How about, have you driven the new Chevy Blazer?
I have not, and I wouldn't expect much out of it.
Me neither. And how about Nissan's Pathfinder?
The Pathfinder is another one that has strayed a little far from the path. See what I did there?
Good one, touche, you wordsmith.
But you know what? But they still have the Nissan Armada, which is, you know, the Nissan Patrol in international markets, and that's like the kind of thing you would see bombing around the Middle East over sand dunes.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's a very capable vehicle. So even though the Pathfinder isn't there anymore for that, you know, I would have loved to have seen like the Xterra continue.
I wrote down Xterra because there is a vehicle that to me, it almost has a little bit of a cult following right now because it was really a well bolted together vehicle. And it was, you know, kind of almost had a little Range Rover look to it or a Land Rover look to it. And I think that, you know, they need to bring back the Xterra, but make it capable. None of this car-based crap. Come on. If you're going to make something called Pathfinder or Blazer, it needs to blaze or find a path, not just, be on the highway.
Here's the funny thing. So I have an XJ Jeep Cherokee. That's a unibody construction. The Isuzu V-Cross, if you remember that. Yeah. That thing was crazy capable, and that was a car platform. So it's not just that it has to be truck-based. It's that you have to imbue it with like real off-road gear.
Right.
So not just, you know, an occasional, like the Blazer, I bet has an all-wheel drive system that it's in front-wheel drive 90% of the time.
Yeah.
And if it feels wheel slip, it's going to send the power back. It needs to have a real driveline, a real low range, stuff like locking differentials. Like the things that allow you to get off-road are so much more than just saying, well, it's got a lift and tire.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
It's a full package, a full armada of different components.
Well, you know, it's like Subaru, one of our sponsors. They have all their cars are all-wheel drive. If you remember, the U.S. ski team used to use them. Very capable. 8 inches of ground clearance at the lowest point. They're actually, you know, car-based, and they can get the job done. George Kennedy, thank you, sir, for a good conversation.
Thanks,
a brisk conversation about off-roading capability. All right, George. Car Tender, Car Gurus, Boston Globe, and U.S. News Report. You'll find George there. I'm Alan Taylor. This is The Drive. There's another hour.
Stay tuned. There's more of The Drive with Alan Taylor.
Brembo has been stopping champions on the track as well as drivers like you and me on the street for over 50 years. Whether it's UV-coated brake discs, low-dust premium ceramic brake pads, or high-temperature brake fluid, BrembostoreUSA.com is the place to go to buy genuine Brembo OE equivalent replacement brake components. Go to BrembostoreUSA.com to help you achieve that 60-0 braking performance you deserve and expect from Brembo. Brembo, the choice of champions and consumers for over 50 years.
This show is presented in part by Dodge. Domestic, not domesticated. Auto News. Exclusive interviews. Real-world test drives. It's your turn to step into the driver's seat. This is The Drive. Now, here's automotive expert, television and radio host, Alan Taylor.
Well, it is time for another fun hour of automotive exploration. Can we say that? Exploration. First guest in this hour, Perry Stern. In the second part of the hour, we'll be talking with Stephen Cole Smith, who's going to talk about motorsports. And I think he also wanted to talk about one car, but the motorsports world is kind of weird right now. Anyway, we'll talk about that later. Editor of Auto NXT and contributor to MSN.com. And you will see this man's work all over the place and not even know it because he's a prolific writer. His name is Perry Stern. He's an available bachelor, and he is behind door number one. Hi, Perry. Did I just date myself?
My wife might argue with that first part, but I can still hang out behind door number one if you like.
Wait a minute. The first part was that you were a prolific writer, so you're still available bachelor.
Oh, no. Prolific writer is good. It's the bachelor part that she might not like.
Okay. Listen, are you old enough to remember the dating game, right?
Oh, yeah. I do remember that, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
It's silly, but yeah.
It is. And I got to tell you, just real quick as a side note as we get going in this hour, I actually saw Steve Martin was on The Dating Game when he was like 22 years old, and he was a, you know, he was a
seriously
a beginning writer, you know, he's a comedy writer. He's 22 years old. It was hilarious. Yeah, just Google it. You'll find it. Steve Martin on The Dating Game. Funny, funny. Anyway, speaking of The Dating Game, if you want to get a good date and you're a man and you think I need to have a man's car, well, how about the new C8 Corvette, the latest iteration of the Chevrolet Corvette? I have not been behind the wheel. I have seen a couple in person, and I kind of went, hey, that doesn't look too bad. Been a lot of stories written on it, but you've driven it. What'd you think?
I liked it. I mean, and it does look fantastic. It's one of those cars that look good from every angle. It doesn't matter. You know, some cars look really good from the front, and you go to the side, and it's like, yeah, this thing looks really good everywhere.
You know, I notice in different colors it looks different, actually. And that's the way cars do, but some colors just suit it better. I saw a bright yellow one. I kind of went, eh, I don't know if I like that color. Saw a black one. It looked pretty good. What color was the one you drove?
I drove it in torch red.
Ooh.
And I have to say, it looks really good in torch red.
There you go.
Because the black trim around just highlights it very nicely.
Right.
It's clearly a Corvette. You see it, you know it's a Corvette. But it's very different from all the past Corvettes.
Yeah.
It arguably, I'd say, one of the best looking ones there is if you take out the, you know, first and second generation that look pretty cool.
Right.
But the nice thing is that they've been able to take advantage of the fact that this is a mid-engine. So this is the first ever mid-engine Corvette. And so by putting the engine behind the cabin, you've got this kind of slow sloping hood that with a kind of a narrower grill, because you don't really need, you know, there's just a trunk up there.
Right. Well, so when you get in a Porsche 911, I remember the first time I went, what the hell's going on here? There's nothing in front of me. You know what I mean? It's like you feel like all you see is
the road.
But
it's great when you're driving, though.
Exactly. And does it have that? I mean, is there a hood or is there just road in front of you?
It's just road in front of you, but it's kind of cool because it's kind of framed by the two big fenders, because the fenders kind of stick up high.
Right.
And so you've got these two, in this case, big red fenders and then just road. Mm. And then you add that, you got a heads up display. And, you know, it's almost like, you know, fighter jet, you know, where you've got this heads up display showing how fast you're going. And it's just superimposed on the road because that's all that's in front of you.
All right.
So it's a fantastic driving position. It reminds me a lot of the original NSX. That was the first time I'd ever experienced anything like that, where it was like a bumper cam. If you ever play any of the video games, you know, the driving games, when you put it on bumper cam, that's the view you get.
And I love that. I can't wait to get behind the wheel so I can feel that V8. And what was that like for you?
It's very quick, no question. And it kind of gets different sounds to it. It's got a great rumble to it just in general. And you can actually change the exhaust notes for everything from comfort. So if you know, don't want to make it get a lot of attention, which I don't know why you would buy a Corvette and not want a lot of attention, all the way to track, which is, you know, really loud exhaust. But when you put your foot down, it gets this great bark every time it shifts gears as you fly down the road. It's a great experience.
Well, like I said, we started out talking about The Dating Game. If you want to date and you're a man and you drive a Corvette, you're going to get some attention. You might get what you want. All right. Price as tested, how much?
I believe the car was about $75,000 is what I drove, which is probably pretty typical. You know, they start around $60,000, and it was well equipped.
Yep. Awesome. All right. Well, new Corvette, is it available at autonxt.net? The story?
It is.
All right.
At least the story is. I don't know about the car.
All right. We'll take a little break. Come back with more Perry Stern. He's got more vehicles to talk about. AutoNXT.net is where you can find the stories on these vehicles. We're going to talk about the 2021 GMC Yukon when we come back. This is The Drive. Sister, do you still
believe in love? I wonder. Stay tuned. There's more of The Drive with Alan Taylor.
Now's the time to earn your bragging rights and rule the road in a powerful Dodge vehicle. With enough style, horsepower, and performance to make your muscle car dreams come true, it's no wonder J.D. Power named Dodge the number one ranked brand in initial quality and driver appeal for mass market brands. Join the brotherhood and experience the strength of Dodge muscle today. Visit Dodge.com or see your local Dodge dealer for great deals. Tied for initial quality study. For J.D. Power 2020 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards.
Well, you're listening to The Drive. I'm Alan Taylor. Our show brought to you in part by Brembo. Brembo brakes, probably the type of brakes you would find on a Corvette or, you know, Ferraris, Lamborghinis, Maseratis, these kind of cars. If you want good brakes, check out Brembo at buybrembo.com. Perry Stern joining us, and Perry says to me in the commercial break, he says, easily the nicest Corvette I've ever driven. I have to think with the evolution that should be the way it's supposed to be. Correct, Perry?
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, if you're going to make a new car, it should be better than the last one.
By the way, I just renamed you Barry Perry. So,
whatever.
Exactly. You said there was a couple little niggly things, but I'm going to send people to your website to find out what those were. AutoNXT.net, not .com, .net. And that's Perry Stern. Okay, the 2021 GMC Yukon, how new is it?
It is all new. Mm. I mean, from the chassis, wheels, all the way up to the styling, this is a brand new full-size, very, very full-size SUV. Mm.
So you got the long wheelbase one rather than the short?
No, actually, I got the short wheelbase, which is already very large. There is a longer wheelbase available as well. But they've actually made it bigger.
Oh, really?
Which isn't really that noticeable from the exterior, but it really means a lot more space for passengers inside, which is nice.
Right.
Especially for those people that get stuck in the third row, which, you know, it's kind of like the penalty box. Typically, it's not so bad in the Yukon.
Huh. So when you say it's all new, I mean, you look at it, you still can tell that it's a Yukon, so it's still family resemblance, right?
Most definitely.
Yeah. And what about when you get inside? I have to think, you know, me, I'm a dashboard guy. If I don't love that dashboard, because I'm looking at it the whole time I'm behind the wheel, you know what I mean? If I don't just love what I'm looking at, it turns me off.
And it's interesting you point that out, is that there are actually two completely different dashboards for the Yukon. Mm. They have the standard one, which has, it's more of what we've seen from GM, where you've got a, you know, the larger display, but it's not terribly well integrated. It's kind of looks like you should be able to remove it. But then you have the Denali, which of course is their top of the line, and that's what I drove, that completely changes the dash to be much more premium, luxurious, much more wood trim. It's a nicer design, and the screen is nicely integrated. It's definitely a higher end feel. So it's interesting that they've decided to go with two completely different looking dashboards, given the fact that it does make a big difference in the car.
Actually, if you think about that, that's quite brilliant, because there's people that use cars and vehicles, SUVs and trucks, you know, like they're a refrigerator, utensils, not utensils, but what do you call that? It's a piece of machinery. You know what I mean? Versus there are people that are car enthusiasts that love their cars, and they love every little bit of every line, every little thing, every stitch in the seat or steering wheel or dashboard. And they've given you a choice. If you love the vehicle and you need an SUV and you really do care, we have this one over here that's like the designer dash, I guess you could say. Interesting. I can't wait to see it. How about powertrain, by the way?
It's got plenty of power, and actually the Denali comes with the larger engine. Yeah. It is interesting that the Denali is only available with the 6.2 liter V8, and it's the only trim that can get that engine. So if you want the big engine, you've got to go to the top end Denali, but it puts out plenty of power. I believe it can tow more than 8,000 pounds, something like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is definitely a vehicle that you can, you know, take, you know, everything with you, I suppose.
Do you think it looks more premium than what used to be, you know, kind of like just an SUV? Have they done anything that kind of made you kind of raise an eyebrow, go, hey, that looks nice?
Actually, yeah. I mean, the Denali's got that big grill. I mean, you know, you're asking if it's recognizable. But when you see that grill, I mean, GMC is very large across the trim there, across the front of the grill.
Right.
And it has those classic SUV lines. You know, it's not trying to be a 40 coupe-like SUV, you know, which a lot of the newer models are. It's very squared off, you know, it's that, whatever they call it, three-box style or whatever it is. And that also helps, you know, with the interior space, so that, you know, it's people in the second row and in the third row are actually going to be pretty comfortable.
Price as tested?
Price as tested, I believe, was around $80,000.
Very good. All right. You can find again the story on the 2021 GMC Yukon Denali at autonxt.net. I'm Alan Taylor. Me and Perry will be right back and talk about a Subaru. We'll be right back. If you're driven by an adventurous heart, you're in luck. The Subaru Outback is all new for 2020. It'll take you as far as you want to explore with standard symmetrical all-wheel drive plus up to 33 miles per gallon. It'll take you off the beaten path with 8.7 inches of ground clearance plus standard X mode with hill descent control. Welcome to the all-new best Outback ever, the 2020 Subaru Outback. Go where love takes you. EPA estimated highway fuel economy for the 2020 Subaru Outback non-turbo models. Actual mileage may vary.
This is The Drive with Alan Taylor.
Well, we're talking to my buddy Perry Stern from AutoNXT.net. He also is a writer for MSN.com. So, Perry, our show is sponsored by Subaru, and whenever anybody talks about Subaru, Perry is an independent. He works for AutoNXT.net, but I just hope he likes the Subaru. And even if you don't, I know you'll say whatever you need to say, but I'm holding my hands in a clasp like a prayer thing so that you'll say nice things. But you don't have to because it doesn't matter.
I liked it.
Okay. You know what? First of all, what is not to like about a Subaru? They're just good cars. That's all there is to it. But anyway, so tell us what you're driving.
So I spent a little time in the newest one, the large Subaru Ascent. So this is their second try, I guess you could say, at a full-size seven-passenger SUV, the B9 Tribeca, if you remember that.
I do.
A few years ago, yeah. And it just wasn't quite big enough. It didn't work well. This one blows that away.
Yeah, right. I actually towed a little Airstream trailer with the Ascent. And I was like, holy mackerel, you know, I mean, because we're still talking four cylinders, but it's amazing what they're doing with four cylinders these days, the horsepower, the torque and the fuel efficiency and all that. I'm like, my gosh, I was driving a Cadillac and I'm like, what's under the hood? I'm thinking it's got to be a V6 or a V8. No, it's a four cylinder. And I was a little bit disappointed and I got it behind the wheel and I mashed on the gas and I was like, oh my God, e-ticket ride from Disneyland that is now going bankrupt in California because of the laws they have. But that's another story. Anyway, notice how I weave that all in there. Ay, ay, ay. So the Ascent.
Because you're a professional.
Where did you go with this thing?
I actually went down to the Washington coast. So it was about, you know, a couple hundred miles out. And, you know, it's just such a nice car on the road. You know, this is with their new chassis. So they, you know, a couple of years ago, they came out with a whole new platform for all of their models. The Ascent is on a larger version of that. But it's just, you know, it handles any kind of bumpy roads or anything very smoothly. The one thing, and maybe it's a good thing, maybe it's not, that I found is that I'm constantly finding I'm going faster than I think I am.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought I was cruising along 60, 65, and I was going 80. It's that quiet and smooth.
Let me tell you, that excuse does not work with the cops because I got a ticket doing 92 about 3 years ago in a new Cadillac again because, you know, the Cadillacs are so quiet. Honest to goodness, I did not have any clue. I thought I was going 65. But here's the deal. I was going with the flow of traffic for a few minutes, and then somebody kind of, you know, got in my way, and I kind of went around them, and I guess I took it on up to about 80 or 90 miles an hour. It's just, you're just driving along, listening to the great stereo systems they have. And speaking of that, what about infotainment on this thing?
It's actually much improved. I mean, every single model Subaru comes out with is better than the last. Mm. And so, yeah, it actually works very well. A nice big screen. I used Android Auto for most of the trip, which hooks up almost instantly. So they've really done a nice job with that. Nice stereo system, you know, as far as the trip down. And it's got a lot of space. And so, you know, we were gone for about a week. And so, you know, you fold the third row down, which is done, you know, just pull a strap in the back and down it goes. And plenty of room for everything. It's got bucket seats in the second row, which is a nice feature. It gives a little more style. And it's, you know, if you do have kids back there, at least they're separated.
Right. Well, and I remember, because I showed this on ABC with Kelly Ripa, it seems like, do they still have like 19 cup holders? And I'm serious when I say 19, I think that's the number.
I believe that is correct. They're everywhere. They're everywhere. And they've also got USBs all over the place, too, which is
right,
nice.
Right, right.
So they've really thought about a family using something like this, which I think is kind of the demographic for a seven-passenger Subaru.
Now, you don't have any grandkids yet, do you? Your kids are not quite old enough for that, you hope.
Not quite old enough, no.
So I imagine
it would work well for the grandkids.
Exactly. I was going to say, I've got two grandkids right now, one from each one of my two kids. I have four kids, but the two that are married. And I got to tell you, my wife is like, she's driving this little Fiat 500 Abarth, and she's like, she loves her little car. She says it's, you know, it's cute as a bug, and it's zippy. But now all of a sudden she's looking at all these SUVs, and I was thinking, well, you know, maybe we'll get a Telluride, a Kia Telluride, because my wife really liked it. The problem is they're marking them up so high because a lot of people like the way they look. And so I said to her, I said, you know, maybe we should look at this, because she does want the three rows for the sake of kids, family, friends, stuff, Costco runs and all that. And so I'm going to have her test drive the new Ascent that you're talking about right now. Price is tested, and starting price, and then price is tested. That's fair.
So starting price is about $39.
Yep.
Once, you know, this car, it wasn't that fully loaded. What I drove was the Ascent Limited, which is one step below the top line. So it's pretty well equipped.
Yep.
The one option on ours was the higher end sound system and the panoramic sunroof, the bucket seats. So $43,300 was the final price.
Right. And you know what's funny? If you look at what's going on, we were just talking about the $80,000 Yukon. Now, I think this thing has a decent towing rating, too, because I remember towing, it wasn't a huge Airstream trailer, but it was a medium-sized Airstream trailer. And it felt like it had plenty of power. It is only a four-cylinder, but Subaru does some amazing stuff with their four-cylinders, like all the automakers are doing these days. All right.
Right. Not to mention, you know, it is all-wheel drive, of course, too, because everything Subaru, for the most part, is all-wheel drive.
Exactly.
So you've got that added benefit as well.
All right. There's a story somewhere at AutoNXT.net on the Subaru Ascent, the 2021 Yukon. Was that a 20 or a 2021 on the Subaru?
Subaru is 2020.
Okay. So you got one 2021 and two 2020 vehicles you can check out. I guess the C8 was a 2020, wasn't it?
It was.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sheesh. See, it's all so confusing this time of year because the 2021s are out. Barry Stern, Auto NXT.
I know,
right? AutoNXT.net. Thank you, brother.
Certainly. Always happy to be here.
Coming up next, we're going to talk a little motorsports with Stephen Cole Smith, and our show brought to you in part by Subaru. And as Perry just said, he loved it. Love. It's what makes a Subaru a Subaru. We'll be right back. Cancer is the number one cause of death by disease for children in the U.S. today. Since the Austin Hatcher Foundation's birth in 2006, it has grown to provide unique programs to help the children and the families affected by pediatric cancer. Support begins at the time of diagnosis and continues throughout survivorship at no cost to families. Lives touched by the foundation continue to rise each day. But we need your help. Donate, volunteer, or partner with the Austin Hatcher Foundation. Learn how you can get involved. Visit hatcherfoundation.org for more information.
Shot through the heart, and you're to blame, darling. You give love a bad name.
Well, you're listening to The Drive. I'm Alan Taylor. Thanks for joining us. For you motorsports fans, it is time. Stephen Cole Smith joining us. He is, of course, automotive journalist. He writes for Auto Week, Automobile Magazine, Grassroots Motorsports, and others, because he's high demand. He's also the guy that knows what's going on. Here's a new word for 2020. I'll spell it first. R-O-V-A-L. Roval. Steve, I have not heard this word until you mentioned it to me, so I'll leave it up to you to tell the world what roval means.
Well, it's pretty easy to figure out, because we've had a roval at Daytona International Speedway since 1959. It's the oval, which is the big NASCAR track, and a road course inside the oval that uses part of the oval track. It's called a roval, and we didn't have to worry about it because we had so few, and because we had so, you know, just a handful of races at them in places like Daytona. But man, we had one at Charlotte last weekend that was what everybody is talking about. Not only did they have IMSA, the sports car guys, racing there Saturday, they had the Cup guys racing there in the rain on a wet track Sunday night. Now, this is crazy, obviously. Those guys have no business doing that. But think about it, Alan. How many times have you and I either been to a NASCAR race or watched it on TV where they've got a 5-hour delay because of rain? They right. can't do anything. They're trying to, the TV guys have taped half an hour worth of stuff, and they're trying to stretch it into 6 hours. And even with that, the race this past weekend went over into another channel. We've had a couple of races this year that's gone from NBC to NBC SPN or NBC Sports Network, and nobody likes that. But if you've got a race at 2:00 and you know it's going to start at 2, rain or shine, that's appealing to a broadcaster. That's a very appealing thing to a broadcaster.
Right.
To be able to tell the local affiliates that, yeah, you will be able to air your local news tonight. Mm-hmm. So it's we're going to see more of these, Alan, and we're seeing 6 of them, not just Rovals, but a couple of road courses, Watkins Glen and Sonoma, like we've always had. And the other 4 are brand new, like Circuit of the Americas, like this Charlotte Roval. A lot of weird stuff going on in the next year because NASCAR's contracts are all terminated as far as the tracks go, so they're able to re-sign new ones, kick out some. Iowa's gone, Kentucky's gone, Chicago's gone, and bring in some new tracks like Circuit of the Americas, the Formula One track down in Austin.
Well, and I have to think, of course, racing in the rain, it means the audience is going to be probably mostly at home. And like you said, making an appointment with your television is kind of important for these people. And when the race doesn't happen, it frustrates everybody, not only the advertiser and everybody else, but it splinters out the audience because they catch it later. They watch it on YouTube or wherever they're going to watch it. So I get it, for the advertiser, for the sponsor, for everybody involved, having an actual time the race starts and then actually running it, rain or shine, is good. Now, the bad, because we call it the good, bad, and ugly, the bad, NASCAR in the rain, I mean, they don't have windows they can roll up like sports car racing.
Right.
What do they do?
They get wet, and their electronics get wet, and they have trouble seeing because they've stuck on one windshield wiper that just kind of flops back and forth when it does work at all,
right.
Which is weird because, you've got guys like Penske and Ganassi that have cars that race in the rain. They have IMSA cars that have windshield wipers that work really, really well.
Right.
So it's kind of surprising some of these guys, the technology of having a windshield wiper, which, of course, every one of their haulers coming to and from the track had a better setup than the race cars did. So that was interesting. But, one of the big deals with this race is that the way they were able to do the Roval, it concluded in time to avoid a clash with basketball and baseball, if not NFL football, but still, they took some hits in the audience. The race was a 1.68 on NBC with a final Nielsen rating. So that's not fantastic, but let's face it, racing has been kind of off the mainstream. They've thrown in some Tuesday and Thursday races to try to make up everything. This year, we can throw the metrics out for 2020, as far as I'm concerned. Nothing figures the same as 2019 or 2021 will, I hope. It's, ratings are interesting, but that's all they are right now. And so far, NASCAR's looking pretty good. I think they've got some good ideas for next year.
It's interesting to think, if you think about NASCAR, and let's just go farther. Let's go all the way to F1, kind of this, and I know I'm going to catch a lot of crap for this, but this prima donna type, multi-hundred million dollar race teams and all this. And they, all of a sudden, the game changes. And it's like, I don't know how they can change it on F1 because F1's, pretty sophisticated. But NASCAR, they've been playing under these kind of same rules for a long time. And all of a sudden, because of viewers and because of advertisers, they're having to kind of almost go back to that grassroots motorsports kind of feel. Now, I know you work for grassroots motorsports. Is there a similarity to kind of that flavor when you're watching these NASCAR guys in the rain? Has it humbled them a little bit?
Absolutely, Alan. Yeah. it's not just that. They're actually racing at a dirt track. They're putting dirt down on Bristol.
Oh, that's right.
And they're going to race a race there. So how much more can you go back to grassroots right. than have these guys on dirt, which they haven't been on since 1970,
right.
if you don't count the truck races that they have at Tony Stewart's Eldora Speedway.
Yeah, a lot of those guys weren't even born.
That these guys are looking back in order to look forward, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. All right. Hang tight. Let me take a little break here. Wow. It's funny, and you talked about the ratings, right? I think those ratings were way up there with the basketball ratings, you know, because of all the controversy right now that's swirling around with who they support and what they stand for. And, you know, the same NFL, we're seeing the same kind of thing. Ratings are in the toilet. I think they should be happy to have the numbers they had for motorsports. We'll take a little break.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Stephen Cole Smith joining us. One of the preeminent automotive motorsports and motorsports writers. You can find him at Auto Week, Automobile Magazine, and, like we were talking, Grassroots Motorsports. This is The Drive. We'll be right back. Brembo has been stopping champions on the track as well as drivers like you and me on the street for over 50 years. Whether it's UV-coated brake discs, low-dust premium ceramic brake pads, or high-temperature brake fluid, BrembostoreUSA.com is the place to go to buy genuine Brembo OE-equivalent replacement brake components. Go to BrembostoreUSA.com to help you achieve that 60-0 braking performance you deserve and expect from Brembo. Brembo, the choice of champions and consumers for over 50 years. Well, listen up, buddies. If you love motorsports, you got to search out Stephen Cole Smith, one of the preeminent motorsports writers in the industry for many years. Auto Week, Automobile Magazine, and Grassroots Motorsports. Of course, you hear him on The Drive here, and you hear him on a lot of other radio and television. He's the guy. And he's joining us right now, and I'm proud to call him my friend. Steve, you know, I talked about, I have to imagine I insulted that handful of hardcore F1 fans. I'm not a big fan of F1 because it's like watching aircraft races. You know, these are just airplanes without wings, you know, and I'm not a wine and cheese racing guy, if you know what I mean. You and I went to, matter of fact, we went together to the F1 race at in Austin. What's the name?
Coda.
Yeah.
Yeah, at Coda.
Yeah,
right.
And I was, you know, we went with Shell, and we got to go kind of with the Ferrari team, and, you know, I was like, it was cool. Don't get me wrong. It was cool. But I think I'm still, you know, I got Jewish heritage, all right? And so I'm cheap, really cheap. So that's first of all. But I know I'm a little bit of a redneck because my mom's from Alabama, so my friends say I'm a redneck Jew. And I guess I just live with that my whole life. So I like a NASCAR. I like sports car racing. But anyway, let's talk about F1 for a second. How are they dealing with all this? You know,
they've had problems. You know how incestuous those guys are. The teams are enormous.
Right.
At a pit stop, they have like 20 guys jumping on the one car at a time. And when they have a COVID outbreak, it moves fast. So they had one, I think, with Mercedes. They managed to survive. Lewis Hamilton wasn't anywhere around as if he's going to be there while they're practicing changing tires.
Right.
But I tell you, Alan, the one thing you got to impress, and I know you're a businessman, you got to be impressed with the business of the broadcast. They come in, they take 2 hours. They set up, they grid, they race exactly the amount of time that they know it's going to take in order for them to bring all three of the winners up into this box. All three get out of their cars, congratulate each other. There's no sponsors around. There's no fans around. There's just those three guys. And then those three guys are asked questions by one reporter. You know, he starts with the third place, second place guy, first place guy, normally Lewis Hamilton. Lewis, how was the race? What, you know, you had a problem on lap 34. What happened? Are you looking forward to next week's race? And that's it. It's 2 hours. It's over. Yeah. It's, the media doesn't get time with the drivers necessarily unless you can set something up. You know, I have waited NASCAR, especially when Tony Stewart wins because he loves to keep the media waiting. I have waited 2 hours to get a comment from a winner of the NASCAR race. These guys come in, they do it seamlessly. You hear from the drivers, you see their faces, and it's out in 2 hours. 1 hour, 59 minutes, 59 seconds, click, gone to something else. You're not stepping on the toes of, you know, women's baseball or whatever women do on ESPN or wherever that stuff airs.
Right.
It's just so clean, it's calculated. And the fact that it's so clean and the fact that it's so calculated is one of the things that turned me off about it. Like you were saying, I like grassroots racing because you never know in the end of a grassroots race who the hell's going to win.
Right.
You probably got 5 or 6 or 20 people out there that can do it, but I can pick up from a list of 5 who's going to win every Grand Prix race.
Right.
So the people that love the technology and love the orderliness of it, they love Formula One, but that's really not me.
I would say the quality of the broadcast and everything that goes into creating that is directly proportionate to the thickness of the purse, if you know what I'm saying. The wallet.
Right.
So, because, I mean,
you're absolutely right.
Huge money, and I'm sure they plan years in advance, but it just takes cubic dollars. And that may be that sterile, you know, overthought out stuff is not for me, but I do appreciate it. I appreciate the amazing quality of the just the machines themselves and the everything, the mechanism of the entire racing platform. Everything about it, it's awe-inspiring, but would I do it?
Yeah, and the fact they get it in and out, I mean, when was the last time a basketball game took an hour or a football game took an hour?
Right.
You know, none of them do. They'll drag it out. There's halftime. There's 15 million fouls. There's, you know, next thing you know, you're missing the first half hour of 60 minutes, which really annoys me because I like 60 minutes. But, you know, not in Formula One. I mean, it makes other sports look ragged. It makes NASCAR, which, you know, maybe goes over 45 minutes just because they have a lot of crashes, or
yeah,
IndyCar because they're going slow because of the rain or because of some other issue that they've got. It just looks professional because it is professional.
Yeah, yeah.
But that doesn't mean professional is the best TV.
But like we were talking about, I don't know whether last week or the week before, you know, Honda's pulling out. So,
yeah,
I don't know. You know, I think we win.
it would be tough if I was on the board of Honda to explain why I should stay in.
Yeah.
I'll put it that way.
I think we need that 100 mil for something else. All right.
Yeah, like cars.
Yeah, exactly. We'll take a little break. We're talking with Stephen Cole Smith, Motorsports, here on The Drive. And don't forget, you know, we have these sponsors, and they got good things going on, like Dodge Power Dollars. For every horsepower of your new Dodge vehicle purchase, you get 10 bucks off. Peeling out in a new Dodge SRT Hellcat Red Eye, you get $7,970 off right now. Power Dollars from Dodge. We'll be right back.
Now's the time to earn your bragging rights and rule the road in a powerful Dodge vehicle. With enough style, horsepower, and performance to make your muscle car dreams come true, it's no wonder J.D. Power named Dodge the number one ranked brand in initial quality and driver appeal for mass market brands. Join the brotherhood and experience the strength of Dodge muscle today. Visit Dodge.com or see your local Dodge dealer for great deals. Tied for initial quality study. For J.D. Power 2020 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards.
Well, it is time to talk about motorsports. Oh, no, we already did that. That's right. Stephen Cole Smith does more than motorsports, by the way. He's also, you're on the North American Car and Truck of the Year council of some sort, aren't you, with a few of the other folks that I do?
Yeah, there's like 50 of us, and it started out, I still say NACA, the North American Car of the Year,
right.
But now it's NACTOY, N-A-C-T-O-Y, which, and maybe you can explain this to me, that stands for North American Car, Truck, and Sport Utility Vehicle of the Year,
right.
N-A-C-T-O-Y. So I have arguments with the young up-and-coming obnoxious snot noses about why NACTOY doesn't mean anything, and NACTOY did. So anyway, we drove, I think, 27 vehicles last week up in Detroit that we have up for nomination. We've got a bunch of SUVs, a few trucks, some pretty nice cars. So I drove some stuff that really nobody has driven yet. So
well, wait a minute. What's the one thing you've driven that you can't talk about?
I can't talk about the Bronco.
Oh.
The new Ford Bronco. There's two Ford Broncos. There's a Bronco Sport, which is kind of replacing the Escape. It's not a real heavy-duty Bronco, but do you know how the new Nissan Sentra, all the commercials have it in copper with a black top?
Yeah, which looks
good. It's a gorgeous-looking car. This is kind of the same way this Bronco is. It's almost a taxi cab yellow orange with a black top. And, man, driving that around Ann Arbor, I could not stop without having somebody roll the window down going, where do I buy one?
Right.
It was it's a great looking car. It's got a 2-liter engine in it that is much, much quicker than you think it would be. And it's as smooth as a sewing machine. And when I came back and gave the keys back, I said, they're going to sell a crap load of these. And maybe I didn't use crap load, but that, you know, get the idea of what I'm talking about. And then the real Bronco comes out around April. We'll be able to drive that. That's the one with all the power that basically is going straight up against the Jeep Wrangler. And why it's taken so long. I mean, the last one was the little Bronco and something I have two of, the International Officer Scout. That was the last real competition those guys had.
Yeah.
So it's about time the Bronco's back, and it's going to be back in a big way this next year.
You know, it's funny. You talk about four-cylinder. I'm driving a four-cylinder Cadillac right now, and I got to get the paperwork
on it. The Force,
CT4? Yeah, and I was driving. I was like, what in the heck is under that hood? You know what I'm saying? It's like, I know it's a four-cylinder, I can hear what it, but when you mash on the gas, get out of the way. And my wife, I said, we went to Costco. I go, you drive. And she goes, why? And I go, I just want you to drive this. Because she has a Fiat 500 that's got a four-cylinder in it, right? This is like and it's an Abarth, so it's kind of the sporty one. She says her car's zippy.
That's a nice one.
Yeah, I said to her, if you don't think this car is zippy with this four-cylinder in, I go, because this has got the same, you know, four-cylinder, your little Fiat 500, because she can kind of picture in her mind this little itty-bitty car. And she mashed on the gas, and I'm telling you, she started giggling. She's like, oh, my gosh. So what they do with horsepower today is miraculous. A lot of people are like, they need to put a V8 in that Bronco, and I have a feeling they're going to just flip everybody out. Look, I mean, perfect examples, look at the Ford Raptor. You know, that's a big truck with a V6. You know, I mean, come on, that thing, it hauls butt. And then guys like John Hennessy, who make them even go faster, you know?
Right. Well, one of the vehicles I drove is the new Dodge TRX,
which
is, I think, short for T-Rex.
Right.
And they went the other route. They put in the Hellcat motor.
God bless
them. They get 702 horsepower. That's a monster. It's a lot of fun. And I'm going to drive it in a few days. Out in Reno, Nevada, we're doing some actual competition driving with it on some of the dirt courses. So I can't wait, man. I can't wait to do that.
Nice. Well, was there one vehicle out of the NACTOY car, the North American Car and Truck of the Year and SUV of the Year, that stood out as your mind as a car that was like, that car really surprised
me? You know, it is going to surprise the hell out of you because it surprised the hell out of me. The Volvo Recharge.
Huh.
It's a little Volvo wagon, a small, very good-looking, superb handling with 402 horsepower electric motor. And I mean, I put you in the back seat and I put a $50 bill on the front seat and we accelerate and I say, if you can grab that in the next 2 seconds, it's yours. I think I'm keeping my $50.
That's awesome.
I mean, a guy did that to me in an Oldsmobile when I was about 12 years old.
Yeah.
And I've been impressed by cars that can do that ever since.
That's awesome.
And
All right.
It was really stunning that little Volvo was that much fun to drive.
That's awesome. All right. Well, Stephen Cole Smith, thank you again. And I know you do more than motorsports. That's why I wanted to just have you talk about some of these cars. Thank you, buddy.
Cool. All righty, man. Thank you. Anytime, Alan. Have a good weekend.
Thank you. Auto Week, Automobile Magazine, and Grassroots Motorsports. Stephen Cole Smith. I'm Alan Taylor. We'll see you next time right here on The Drive.
If you're driven by an adventurous heart, you're in luck. The Subaru Outback is all new for 2020. It'll take you as far as you want to explore with standard symmetrical all-wheel drive plus up to 33 miles per gallon. It'll take you off the beaten path with 8.7 inches of ground clearance plus standard X mode with hill descent control. Welcome to the all-new best Outback ever, the 2020 Subaru Outback. Go where love takes you. EPA estimated highway fuel economy for the 2020 Subaru Outback non-turbo models. Actual mileage may vary.